No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Together with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So call in at 888-627-6008 or Skype your questions to BBSRADIOPR. We're happy to be with you tonight, and we have an old friend of the show and special guest, Anise Jenkins from Stand Up for Democracy. And we're going to talk about D.C. statehood. And then later in the show, we're going to talk a little bit about the debates. And we hope Anise will stay with us. That may bore Anise since he may want to leave. But we're going to do those two things. And first, let me start out before I introduce our guest by telling you where we stand on statehood these days. We just got three brand new co-sponsors. We got Jeff Van Drew from New Jersey 2nd. We got Lizzie Fletcher from Texas 7th District, and of course, from the great state of California, and what a segue to bring Maria in. From the great state of California, we have Josh Harder from California's 14th. Maria, are you with us?
Yes, sir. Good evening. Hi, Michael.
Good evening. Hi, and you know what? California has 43 co-sponsors. 43
Good
co-sponsors.
Grief.
Yes.
Like if they, and if we aren't your friends,
you're
who
our
can
friends
you count on but Californians?
And,
huh?
And in second place is New York with 19. Now, this
yeah,
is
distance. Distance,
yes,
second place.
Distance, second place. And this is significant in that, you know, now Hawaii, for example, is 100% with their three co-sponsors. But the thing is, between California and New York, they have approximately the same amount of people, you know, in terms of representatives in Congress. Right, right. They're both gigantic states, right? In fact, California may be number one, I don't know. But New York is a close second. And they're lagging behind. They're not even halfway to the amount
No, they're at 20%.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Well, no, at about 50%.
Well, 50%.
Not quite.
Sorry.
50%, yeah. Right.
Sorry.
But yay, California. So
Michael, from California, are they all Congress or are they Assembly too?
No, this is all Congress. These are all members of Congress that
okay
support the bill in Congress. And the good news is, and this is a great segue to bring in our guest, Anise Jenkins, is that
one of my favorite people.
And one of mine too. And we have 216. We have 216 co-sponsors, and we only need 218 to pass the bill. So we're almost there. And with that, let's bring on Anise Jenkins from Stand Up for Democracy. Anise, are you with us?
I am here, and I'm really, really excited.
Well,
yeah,
it's wonderful. Yes,
you know,
I mean, our dreams are coming true.
Yes.
Anise,
and
how long have you been involved in the D.C. for statehood movement?
1997 is when I first got involved, and that's like, what, 21 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, going on 21 years, and it's a lot of my adult life.
Right, she
has
was
been involved with statehood. Yes,
she had just turned 19 at the time.
That's right.
So she's been involved
most
of her adult life.
Maybe 16.
That's right.
But yeah, it's exciting. We should point out that two of the co-sponsors are just like our delegate. They don't actually have a vote. They would be the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. No, Puerto Rico is not a co-sponsor. Guam. The Virgin Islands and Guam, I think. So there are two that. So we really need four people to pass it. But most bills don't have near this many co-sponsors, right? And these hard. This is almost unheard of to have this many
really
co-sponsors.
It really is. It's like saying that the people want D.C. to be the 51st state. This is logical. This is constitutional. People understand what the statehood movement is all about. That's what it says.
Yeah,
you wouldn't have their representatives supporting it.
It's about fairness.
Yes.
It's about doing the right thing. And politics and your party are second or third in the conversation.
That's right. Absolutely.
Well, and let me tell you the bad news about California, Maria. I hate to burst your bubble, but on Monday we met with Dianne Feinstein's office. As you may or may not know, Kamala Harris, one of your two senators, is a co-sponsor of the bill. But Dianne Feinstein, who was a sponsor of the bill last time it was in Congress, is on the fence right now. So we're trying to...
Interesting.
Yes, we're trying to push her.
What is her argument or her... Where is her dilemma? What I mean, obviously, political has to be the major issue, but why? Why now? Why does it matter now?
We don't know. She was supposed to meet with me personally, but at the last minute, she backed out and sent her chief of staff, who says that she doesn't want to co-sponsor a bill that doesn't have a chance of passing. Now, it doesn't have a chance of passing in the Senate. We know that. But we're trying to build momentum. And it's going to come to the Senate. There's a little known rule that if it passes in the House, which it's most likely going to do, that the bill can be hand delivered to the clerk of the Senate, and that will automatically trigger a vote in the Senate. So we may actually get a vote in both houses this time, and that would be amazing. But we're not sure why she doesn't want to be on it, because last time she was on the bill, 1278, and it was a Republican controlled Senate then as well, when we knew it wasn't going to pass. And more than important than that, it was a Republican controlled House, so it wasn't going to pass in the House either. Yeah. So we don't know.
It would seem as if she would want to be part of history. We're talking about a landmark decision. And
exactly.
She should want to be on the right side of this decision. You know, she can tell her children,
her legacy,
I was there.
Right.
I did it.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, Michael and Anise, can you tell me and our listeners, what is the best case scenario today? How do you see this unfolding without a blemish, without a hiccup, with the way it's supposed to go?
Go ahead, Anise.
Okay, I see it passing the House. And I listened to your program last week with Johnny Barnes, and I was so inspired that he talked about how, who was it, Strom Thurmond jumped on board with the D.C. Home Rule Bill, which is a statehood, but it doesn't give us equal citizenship. But, I mean, we had somebody like Strom Thurmond get on that bill. That's what we want. We want somebody on the Republican side to step out and say, this is the right thing to do. These people are citizens. These people deserve citizenship rights, just like everybody else does. That's
my world. In the world.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, my argument that I'm making in a letter to Senator Feinstein this week is that if the criteria for doing the right thing you know, as we know, we quote Mark Twain from time to time. He said, you're never wrong to do the right thing. But if the criteria for standing up for civil rights was your estimate that it would pass or not pass, we never would have ended slavery. Women would never have gotten the vote. You know, think of how many things got passed.
Black men wouldn't have gotten the right to vote.
Right. Yeah. Right. Think how many things have passed when it looked like they couldn't, when they looked like that wouldn't have happened. Before 4 years before Barack Obama was elected, if you polled all the political pundits in Washington as to the likelihood that America would elect a black president, I think 99% of them would have said it wasn't going to happen. But Anise is absolutely right. We need a Republican, a brave Republican, to stand up and take a stand. And I think when that happens, as Johnny pointed out, the world for us will change. And in that regard, we're working on several Republicans. One is Joni Ernst of Iowa, who's a veteran, because veterans are very strong. You know, it's hard to tell somebody that fought for the country that they don't deserve representation. Joni Ernst is a Republican. We've met with her office. They didn't say no. They said maybe. You know, so you know, we're talking to her. She's up for re-election. We have a strong group. We just had them, as you know, Maria. We had the leader of the group on the show not long ago. Iowans for DC statehood. So our hope is that we'll be able to get somebody like Ernst on the bill. Tell us what you're doing at Stand Up, Anise. What kind of things are you involved in?
Well, we've been sending out e-blasts regularly to encourage people to come to the hearing. I think it would be marvelous if we had, when we had the hearing in the Senate, we had one overflow room. We want to at least two overflow rooms of D.C. residents and supporters who really, really care about this issue. We want to have a strength of people there who are demanding their rights. You know, this is very important that we show that we really care, and that will get the country interested and get the media interested in what's going on in D.C. I think it's very important, but we will be out passing out flyers in our communities, getting people to come up to the hearing. We are participating in the video that is going to be shown that say, I'm showing up for D.C. For the hearing. There's a video being posted. Hopefully we'll get it posted on our website, www.freedc.org, and it's also promoted by another organization so that people can get inspired to come up. Take a day off. It's not like it's a lot to do for what you deserve. Take a day off that day. Take July 24th off. Get there early. Get in line early and get in that room. And show the representatives how much you really care, how much you are demanding that your rights are observed. It's very important. We'll be in a Palisades parade, passing out flyers. We'll be encouraging people in any way that we can. If we had some money, we would pay you to come down, but we don't have any money, so we're hoping that you will come down and make it part of your day.
And be part of history.
That's
which one of us today, if given the opportunity to march across the Pettus Bridge with Dr. King, wouldn't have done it? You know, I mean, right?
Yeah.
Which one of us wouldn't have been on the mall? We had for the 50th anniversary that I Have a Dream speech. We had people that were actually there. 50 years ago, which one of us today wouldn't wish that we hadn't been there, that we hadn't heard that amazing speech, that we hadn't been part of history? this is your chance to be part of history, because this is going to be history making.
And so, my birthday is August 28th, which is the anniversary of the March on Washington. I've always felt that that's something I need to do, be part of history.
So the timeline. I'm sorry, Maria. It's okay, Anise. Thank you. The timeline for this to unfold is urgent. It's within the near future.
Yeah.
So can you let us know what the dates are?
Yeah, July 24th. That's the date of the hearing. And it's going to be held. Elijah Cummings. And this is another important thing. And I really want Anise's perspective on this. But we now have, and we've had champions before, but we now have Elijah Cummings, who's a neighbor and is championing this issue for us, along with our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton. And I think this is really, really important that it's not just our delegate on the Hill, Eleanor Holmes Norton, but that we also have a powerful committee chairman like Elijah Cummings standing up for us. Because I don't think America, and you tell me how you feel about this, Anise, but I don't think we've couched this enough as a civil rights issue. This is a civil rights struggle. This is like, you know, we talk about voter suppression. We talk about, you know, 1,000 people in South Carolina or Georgia being, or 2,000 people being kept away from the polls and how horrible that is. But you've got 700,000 Americans here, American citizens in the District of Columbia, many of them actually African-American, who are being kept away from their government for more than 200 years. So this is like the ultimate voter suppression. Is it not?
Yes. I cannot forget what happened in 1997, which really inspired me to get involved in this. The Congress could overtake the local government of D.C. Now, nothing has changed in regard to that. If there was a congressman like Faircloth, was in office at that time, who decided they wanted to overtake our local government, just say, nothing that you are saying is going to take effect. We're going to step in and be the local government for the District of Columbia, whether you voted for us or not. That could happen now. It could happen now. It was called the Financial Control Board. It took over schools. It took over everything that our local government had, but parks and recreation had nothing to do with finance. And that could happen again. You would have the nation's capital being ruled by five, and it is now being ruled by 535 people who were not voted in office by one, not even one, of those 702,000 residents of the nation's capital. It's just insulting. It's really extraordinary that we're going around the world promoting ourselves as this great democracy when we don't have that in our own capital. We are the only capital that exists under the thumb of the central government of the country. We are the only country whose capital exists that way. It is a civil rights issue. It's the last civil rights issue of the 21st century, and it's got to be squashed. It's got to be something that we look at in our rearview mirror, and it cannot be tolerated.
Well, you know,
so on July 24th, though, Michael and Anise,
yeah,
what happens?
There's a hearing,
and what after does that the mean?
Well, they have a hearing of the bill. It means that the bill I'm sorry?
Who introduces the bill? Who vouches for it? Who campaigns for it? Who champions
Well, right now our champion is Elijah Cummings, who's head of the committee. But oversight and government reform, where the bill now resides, that's where it was referred. So he'll have a hearing. And who testifies? We haven't had a list of who testifies yet. When the bill was in the Senate last time, I was one of the people that testified. But we assume that our mayor will testify, our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, will testify. If these people are reasonable, they would have somebody like Anise Jenkins, who's such an articulate spokesman for the bill, testify. Our elected representative, Franklin Garcia, should probably testify. I don't know who they'll have testify, but they will have a series of people testify, and then hopefully it will be referred out of committee to a floor vote. And if it goes to the floor, it will, when you have 216 co-sponsors and you only need 218 votes, we assume it will pass overwhelmingly in the House of Representatives. And then from there, it would be referred to the Senate. Now, we don't expect it to have a hearing in the Senate. Maybe it will, but it's not likely. And it probably will not be referred to vote in the Senate, and it won't pass in the Senate. But we're building momentum because it's a partisan issue, as we pointed out. We have 216 co-sponsors in the House and 33 in the Senate, and they're all Democrats. So we don't expect it to pass in the Senate, but you know what? The Senate will be controlled by the Democrats, if not in 2020, maybe in 2022 or 2024. But whenever it is, we're building momentum so that, we've been at this for over 200 years. So if the Democrats don't control the Senate this time, they may control it next time or the time after that. But whenever we get control of the Senate, it's likely the bill will pass there as well. And that's
does
all
it
has to happen.
Does it get remanded back to the committee again, or does it stay as a potential Senate vote? It hovers for a year or four.
Yeah, it does. It just sits out there. It doesn't get it doesn't come to a vote. It needs to come to a vote. It can be in committee forever, but it needs to come to a vote. You know, we've had a show too, Maria, as you understand, about the Equal Rights Amendment. The Equal Rights Amendment has been out there since the 1970s. Yeah. So it can stay out there. The languishing. It's one state short of ratification at this point. And if you've noticed in the debates, which we're going to talk about in a little while, the Equal Rights Amendment has been coming up. It's been coming up in lots of discussions. So it's likely that the Equal Rights Amendment will pass soon, too. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to build momentum. Let me ask Anise, what do you think about during the debates, for example? My colleague Senator Strauss has done commercials with notable celebrities for DC statehood, yeah. And they ran those commercials on MSNBC.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, they ran them on MSNBC local. Now, to me, this seemed to me to be very strange. First of all, we know that more than 80% of the people in the District of Columbia support DC statehood. Yes. Why would you run these locally? It's like we just can't bring ourselves to do the right thing. Anise probably didn't see any of the commercials. I don't know if you watched the debates. I watched all the debates.
I watched the debates. Yeah, I did. You know what? I tweeted out, when will we hear DC statehood become an issue on the Democratic debate? When is it going to be called as a very important issue? I mean, what more do we need to do? It's really ridiculous. You know, what more do we need to do? Nancy Pelosi has come out in support of it. We have 216 endorsers of the bill. We don't need to do any more. I want to see the party step forward and throw that question out to the candidates. I want to hear what they are thinking.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, and that's part of our problem with the Democratic Party. And we really should work on the Democratic Party. One of the problems that we have with the Democratic Party is that the District of Columbia always votes Democratic. Well, as the best Democrats in America, really, they ought to stand up for us, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
You'd think it would be a no-brainer.
A no-brainer. 93% of us voted for Hillary Clinton. You know, I'm fond of saying 93% of her family probably didn't vote for her. You know, 93%. Come on. I mean, that's his, you know, I don't know a presidential candidate that can say that. I mean, Ronald Reagan was a very popular presidential candidate, and I bet 93% of Californians did not vote for him. You know, 93% of Georgians didn't vote for Jimmy Carter.
Yeah,
93% of people in Illinois didn't vote for Obama. You know, the Democrats should really stand up and say, you're the best, so we're going to help you. But they don't. You know, where we are at the convention, Maria? I've been at the past 10 Democratic nominating conventions. And you know where we always are? We're looking at the back of the heads of people from Guam and the Virgin Islands. We're always up in the rafters. You know,
really?
With a very, yes. Who's in the front? Who's in the front row? California's in the front row. New York's in the front row.
Sure.
Illinois. Yeah. This is what we call the sacred 11, you know, the 11 states that you need to win to get elected. But the Democrats are always and behind. And, you know, I have a very dear friend and advisor and a friend of Anise Jenkins, I believe, who tells me he was the first representative elected in the District of Columbia, Charles Moreland. And he thinks there are people in the district that really don't want this to happen in government. What do you think, Denise?
He's saying he doesn't think there's some D.C. residents who don't want
statehood. He thinks there are people inside the D.C. government that don't want.
Oh, you know, that might be possible because it took a lot to get some of those people on board with statehood. I'm going to be honest about it. They were elected officials who would not touch the S word. They would not touch it. They would not talk about it. All they wanted to talk about was getting a vote. So I think that's very possible. You know, now it's a popular thing. Everybody has jumped on board. But I'm really glad because I can look at a time when people did not support statehood, and I know who you are.
Well, and you know what?
I can say who they are.
Well, and you know what? We talk about it, but then we put a commercial. We got a $15 billion budget, and then we put a commercial on MSNBC local instead of putting it on NBC, where most people watch the debate. If you want to convince America that you want this, don't you want to put it on the channel that America's watching? And not on the local feed for a cable channel.
The candidate had something to do with that, and it was probably the candidate's money, and that's how that best they could spend it to align him with DC statehood to DC.
But the candidates don't pay for this commercial; we pay for it. So,
but the airtime. You don't think that the candidate who's aligning himself with D.C. for statehood paid for it to be placed on MSNBC? That's my guess.
No. The city paid for it. So
the city paid for it?
Yes. So the city chose to go the cheaper route. And I wonder about that sometimes, you know.
Well, isn't there some divisiveness in the city council about statehood?
No, not
officially.
Yeah, not
publicly.
You know,
heard that there was.
Well, no, you know, one of the oldest political ploys is to take something that you think is not going to pass okay, and to come out and speak eloquently about it, you know, to stand up for it because you know it's not going anywhere. And I wonder sometimes if people inside the D.C. government don't do that. They talk about it, but then they don't put, you know, it's a priority in the district.
Right. Let me just bring this one point up.
Go ahead.
Why do you think that you don't have a salary? Why do you think the statehood delegation, the two senators and the one representative, do not get paid? So there are the only unpaid lobbyists in Washington, D.C., as far as I know.
Yeah.
Why do you think that's so?
Well, I think that's it.
Does it have something to do with commitment?
Yeah, well, and
the commitment of the government? Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's also, you know, it goes beyond that. We're also the only people, if we become a state, we're the only people that are not recognized by the state, elected officials. So the mayor and all the members of the city council become legislators and the governor. Every ANC commissioner, and there are over 200 of them, they transfer into the new government. The only people that do not transfer into the new government are me, Senator Strauss, and Representative Garcia. And this is the only time that's ever happened. Every time there's been shadow senators, they've always become real senators when the state is established, at least temporarily until there is an election. But we've been purposefully excluded. We are also the only people that are elected in the District of Columbia citywide that are not allowed to have matching funds. We're the only. They don't want us in their government. They don't want us paid, and they don't even want us to be able to campaign and on an equal footing with everybody else. You know, the last man that ran against me in the primary spent over $200,000 running for this office. So it's a serious deal, but yet we don't get matching funds.
And when you say they, Michael, who are they?
The mayor and the council.
So where I got the drift then. They weren't.
Okay. Right. Mostly the city council, but then the mayor who could intervene on our behalf does not.
Well, and that the mayor's going to speak out on behalf of this before the committee? The mayor shouldn't be allowed to do so.
Well,
they need to walk the walk and talk the talk. They're not.
Well, you know, I mean, that's what lends credibility to the idea that maybe they really don't want it. You know, it doesn't change anything for the mayor. The only people that get something out of statehood are the people that actually live here. The mayor doesn't get anything. She doesn't get any more money. She doesn't get any more power. The council members don't either. Politically, who gets something out of statehood? The 700,000 people that live here. Those are the people.
And aren't they put in office to protect our rights? And aren't they put in office to care about us?
Yes.
And aren't they
Isn't that why
the
we
people?
Elect them?
Yes. But I wonder.
I don't get it. Who cares if they make something out of it or not? It's the right thing to do.
That's right.
That's absolutely right.
I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So, well, you can't stand up against something that 80% of the people in the District of Columbia who vote for you are in favor of. So you talk the talk. You don't necessarily, you don't necessarily walk the walk, and that's
they shouldn't be given the privilege to speak about something that they're not 100% behind. How dare they? That's disingenuous.
Well, they say they're 100% behind it, so you certainly can't exclude them. But I look, what bothers me? There's no coordination, and that's because they won't allow us to be leaders, and they won't be leaders. We have a councilman here in the District of Columbia that's just proposed a bill, for example, it's very well intended, but he wants to allow felons to be able to vote. Okay. Tucker Carlson has already run a show with him with a banner on the bottom that says, Now the District of Columbia wants rapists, convicted rapists and murderers to have a vote while they're in jail. You know, is this really, you know, I don't know how I feel about that, but is
bad
it really?
Timing.
Yes,
timing.
Is it right? Is it really right. The right time to put that on Capitol Hill?
No.
While we're discussing
timing.
Statehood? Right.
That's just that's just what they used to do with Marion Barry. They would they used to use him to say these people shouldn't have the right to vote. They keep voting for Marion Barry, and they would use him to scare people. It was really horrific what they used to do with him. But they would say, "Oh no, D.C. residents keep reelecting Marion Barry." Well, that was our right. You know, you want to run. You want to run D.C. Okay, you're going to run D.C. and tell us who to vote for. No, it doesn't happen. It probably got him more votes.
Well, and you know what? Anise brought up Faircloth, who was a horrible person in the district. But they're still out there. We got a guy in Maryland, right, Anise? Andy Harris. And, you know, and maybe he's not as bad as Faircloth, but only because he hasn't had the opportunity to be as, you know, he's really, no pun intended, cut from the same cloth that you know, they want to stand up against the District of Columbia and make things as difficult as they possibly can for us. So, so I wonder sometimes really who's on our side and who's not. Anise Jenkins, there's no doubt whose side she's on. But some of the people that are elected in the district, I really don't know. I really don't know where they stand because they pass legislation that works against us. And, you know, I've got to tell you, you talk about Marion Barry, who is somebody that I think, you know, I won't speak for Anise, but I think I had great admiration for him, and many people in this town had great admiration for him. But, you know, in spite of his foibles, because you know what? He didn't steal money from the government. His foibles were all personal problems, you know. But since I've been elected, we've had two councilmen go to jail. We've had a sitting councilman that now sits on the council under investigation for 4 years by the federal government. We've had a chairman of the council resign in disgrace. We've had two other councilmen who were beat for re-election in the middle of investigations of malfeasance. And we now have a council member who's under the same type of investigation. So, you know, and this has just been since I've been elected. So, you know, the city government doesn't help us a whole lot in that regard. And
to me, that says let's strip Chicago of statehood.
Right.
If you have to be perfect, if you have to not have any foibles, then let's strip the people who do.
Right. Well, I'm from New Jersey. You know, I'm from North New Jersey. So I think when I grew up in North, we didn't have a mayor that didn't go to jail. I mean, it's not an excuse to take our rights away. But it doesn't help.
I was saying that about when same-sex marriage was coming up and my heterosexual friends were like, no, they can't get married. That's between a man and a woman. And I said, and that's because we've done such a brilliant job at the institution of marriage as heterosexuals. We need to keep it sacred because the homosexuals won't do so. Like, really? Come on, we got a 50% divorce rate minimum and we want to keep the sanctity of marriage to a man and a woman? Let's be serious here.
Well,
I mean,
and that's always an excuse, right? We can't change because change is bad. And there's always those people. There's always those people out there.
I want to ask Anise, Michael, if you don't mind. And I've been asking our recent guests the same thing. You've been involved since 1997. Have you ever felt this kind of momentum that Michael's been talking about? Have you felt, can you taste it? Can you see it? Okay.
Yes.
That's what
I have never experienced this before, the situation, the scenario, all of these things that are falling into place. It's new for me. And it tells me something is happening. Uh-huh. Something very positive is happening with statehood. And I believe that we are closer than we've ever been.
That sounds like it.
Yes.
I think so, too. Like, and I think a lot of the credit for that goes to people like Anise, who have never let the issue die, who are out there all the time working hard to make sure that people support it. Because in the end, that is really what trumps, no pun intended, trumps everything, is the support of the people. If the people demand it, it will happen. The most profound thing that I've learned was from Eleanor Holmes Norton, who in a meeting, I think Anise might have been there, said to us, nothing ever gets generated within the walls of Congress. It all comes from the outside. Everything comes from the outside. We deal with it on the inside, but the pressure and the momentum and what makes it happen is always generated from the outside. So
here's July 24th.
July 24th. And, you know, we have July 4th coming up. Now, Anise will be there in the parade, and I'll be there in the parade throwing candy to children. This is what we do. You know, this is part of the tradition. My assistant, Karen, wants me to throw raisins. I said, what, you want your kids to hate us?
It's healthy.
Yes, she wants us to throw fruit snack. I said, that's their parents' responsibility to make sure they're healthy. My responsibility is to make sure they like us. So I'm going to throw candy, even though, you know, there are probably nutritionists out there that think I'm a horrible person.
Well, tell Karen that you'd rather throw prunes because they're easier to catch.
Yeah, exactly. We're not going to throw avocados. We're not going to throw oranges or apples. I said to Karen, I said, those are the people that we always hated at Halloween, right?
And
some woman would give you a bag of granola or an apple or something, you know, and you'd be like, oh, you know, you blacklist them immediately. You put them on the no-show list, right? You say to your friends, don't bother going to that house. The lady across the street is giving out Snickers. That's where you want to go, right?
But Senator Brown, you know what I think we should, after this hearing, we should have plans to really hit people hard, you know, to really keep the momentum going, to really just get it on the news, get it out there, get more support, keep generating more support, national, local. You know, this is our time. This is really our time to push statehood to where it needs to go. We've got to get a Republican. What do you think, Maria? How can we get a Republican on?
There's a Republican that is not running for reelection in the Midwest, and her name's escaping me. But I'm thinking she would be a prime candidate because she has nothing to lose.
Yeah, that's right. And we should target people like that.
Exactly. I think she's Indiana, maybe. And she's early 60s, and she says she wants to spend more time with her family. Mm-hmm. She's a moderate Republican. And so somebody like that, where they're reasonable, and they don't have to worry about reelection. Yeah. And they probably might want to be on the coattails of history. I'll do whatever I can, and it has nothing to do with history. Again, it's about what's right and what's fair. But there have to be other Republicans that have to see the sense in that argument.
Yeah, we used to go to Tim Scott's office all the time. Yeah. My belief was, this is a black senator. He is going to want to be on the right side of history. And he just goes the other way. He just runs
really
from it.
Right. Yeah. And we met with Tim Scott, and we've met with Joni Ernst with their offices. And Anise is right. They never say, no, I don't want to support it. But yes, they go the other way. And yeah, we need a brave Republican. And in the House last time, we went and visited the 8 Republicans who were on the Puerto Rico bill. And we couldn't even get any of them. There wasn't, and the only reason we did that is there was not a Senate bill. There was only a House bill for Puerto Rico. But we can't even get the Puerto Rican delegate, who's a Republican, to get on our bill, even though Eleanor Holmes Norton was on her bill. It's just amazing to me. So we need one brave Republican. If you're out there listening, you know, we really maybe we need to make Maria chairman of Republicans for D.C. yes. statehood.
That's right.
You know what? I'd accept that honor, actually.
Thank you. We're going to get on you, Maria. Thank you so much.
I'm happy to do whatever I can, honestly. And I'm sure it's going to destroy my relationship with the party even further. But whatever. Because if they don't get reasonable soon, I may have to defect, especially if Roe v. Wade gets in the mix here. Mm. I mean, that's my litmus test. I wouldn't stay in the party if that becomes an issue. I just can't.
Well, and you know, you got to be careful what you say to Anise Jenkins, because she's the most tenacious lobbyist in America. So
I'm happy to join you on this.
You can get by on me, but if you make a commitment to Anise, better step.
Don't believe him. He'll be knocking on your door.
Well, since we only have a few minutes left, and I'd love to hear Anise's take on this as well as there's Maria. Let's talk about the debate for a second. I heard
Can
Bill
I just
Maher,
give one brief overview? Is that I thought Wednesday was beautiful, and I thought Thursday was tumultuous.
Well, I heard Bill Maher say last night that he now realizes that the problem in America is overcrowding. You know, because we had 20 people on the stage, and they've been making lots of jokes. But, you know, Julian Castro, who seemed to be doing so well, said that he thinks that abortion should be legal for everybody, including transgenders. You know, of course, people are making jokes about that. You know, Joe Biden said that his first official act as president would be to get rid of Donald Trump. I don't know. Nobody even knows what that means. Does that mean we're going to deport him? I don't know. I don't know what he means by that. So I think they were nervous. I think that I'd like to say about the one candidate that accepted our invitation to be on Shadow Politics, where was the first place that she appeared was Marianne Williamson. And I think she did pretty well, even though everybody...
She got the least amount of time. It was just over 2 minutes that she was able to speak.
And, you know, people are making fun of her because she wants to, you know, hug everybody and bring love into the process. And you know what? She's not going to get elected president, but she's an important voice, and I hope she stays in there. I hope she stays in there because we don't need a little more love in America.
Yeah. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
I really liked her because she did. She voluntarily talked about reparations, and I was at the reparations hearing on the Hill. I had to stand in line for an hour, and hopefully our hearing will go like this. And there were so many people in line. I finally got in after an hour. They had 3 overflow rooms. She talked about reparations. She didn't have to be asked the question. I thought what they really did was violate the suggestion that President Obama had, don't form a circular firing squad, which is what I believe they did. And they were after Joe Biden because he's leading. I guess that's what you do. But I remember a time when you did not attack a member of your own party during a debate. You didn't try to tear them down. And, I mean, that's what they did. That's what
you know what?
Whatever.
There was a article on the front page in Style 6 in the Washington Post today, yesterday, where this woman said, it's called The Holistic Approach of Marianne Williamson. And she said that Marianne was the only candidate up there that talked about, didn't tell you who she was, didn't tell you what she'd done. She talked about what needed to happen. And she really admired that about her, that she was the only one that didn't say, you know, I've done this, I've been there, she talked about the future and what we needed to do. And I think that's very true. I think we need more of that. And I think Anise is absolutely right. We can't go through 18 months of tearing each other down in the hopes of winning. We need to come together.
It just makes me grimace. You know, that's why I loved Wednesday. I thought it was polite. It was respectful. It was productive. I was super impressed with Elizabeth Warren and Julian Castro. I thought Cory Booker did all right, but I didn't like Bill de Blasio, and I didn't care for the is he the governor of Washington? Sorry to sound ignorant.
No, mayor of New York.
No, I know about... But also
you mean
the governor of Washington.
Yeah, Inslee.
I didn't care for either of them. But what I did like was the decorum, the respect, that they didn't preempt one another. They didn't step on each other, unlike Thursday.
Yeah, no, and that's absolutely true. And, you know, these guys were all trying to score points with, you know, to stand out. But in so doing, I think you're right. I think they attacked each other, and that's not going to get us anywhere.
Let's talk about Kamala in that regard. You know, I think I've been a fan of hers since she was a representative, you know, attorney general here in the California.
Yeah.
But I thought what she did with Vice President Biden was disrespectful.
Yes,
and
America
is
saying that.
I everything I've read says that everyone thinks that she sees the moment, and she, you know, they can see her interrogating Trump in the debates and et cetera, et cetera. But I just thought, this is not the place. But she rose to the occasion, but I just cringed the entire time.
Well, you know, they've done polling since, and you're right. All the news pundits are saying that. But the polls show that people really don't care about it. They really don't care about how he felt about busing because it was such a controversial issue and because he has a good record on civil rights, you know, legislation.
And to his defense, he didn't lash back. You know,
No. He
just kind of looked down and it was like, wow, this is a new day and age, man. This is terrible.
Well, I think that Anise hit the nail on the head, and I agree with you that we can't go through months of attacking each other and then expect to convince America. And you know, and I think the article in the Post about Marianne is really true, that we need to start talking about what people want to hear, not like I'm the coolest guy on the block. Or, you know, or I don't like you because of something you did 30 years ago. That's not going to help us.
Do you think it's like that because the person who supposedly won the election, I said supposedly won, is the one that said he could go on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and still be elected.
Right.
There was not a Democrat that went that far.
Right. Well, I think that my personal opinion is that Donald Trump won the election because people are tired of what's going on in Washington, and they wanted to throw a wrench into the works. They wanted to do that. You know,
I agree with you.
Yeah, it's like my grandmother. Look, I lived in a city that was predominantly black. When I grew up, and there wasn't a black teacher, there wasn't a black fireman, it was horrible, North New Jersey. And my grandmother, who was an Italian immigrant, you know, she used to support the vigilantes in the neighborhood because she thought they kept her safe. She would tell you that they were horrible people, that she would never have one of them in her house, but, you know, she felt they kept her safe. And I think that's the same. Right. I think it's the same thing is going on here, that people are like, you know what, we hate what's going on in Washington, so let's send somebody in there that just doesn't care one way or the other what he says or what he does to shake things up. But for the Democrats to take control again, they're going to need to do more than say we don't like Donald Trump.
We've said that for 2 years now, Michael, haven't we?
I know. Said that for 2 years.
That it's not about resist. It's got to be something right. That's substantive. Yeah.
Right. What are you going to do after you resist? You know, right. You've got to come up with a solution.
Then what?
All right. Well, God bless Denise Jenkins for coming on our show. She's an old friend of our show.
Thank you so much. I don't deserve all this praise, but
thank you.
No, I know. You're absolutely, I just admire you so much because you want to talk about congruence and talk the talk and walk the walk. Your picture should be underneath the definition of it. It's fabulous that you are doing what you're doing, and you've been doing it tirelessly for decades.
I'm going to have all white hair by the time we get statehood. We better hurry up.
No, I know.
Close. And by the way, I'm envious of your head of hair, I might add.
Yeah, and I would go a step further and say your picture should be on a $20 bill.
Trump won't let me go. We got to have Harriet up there first. We got to have Harriet Tubman on there first.
I know. But
all right, works too.
But thank you so much for being on the show, Anise. Folks, we'll see after the 4th of July. I hope everybody has a great 4th.
Safe.
And, you know, I just want to say something as we end the show very quickly, that I started this show 6 years ago with a friend of mine. She had to leave. Kathleen had to leave because she was a lobbyist and she couldn't be on a political show. And I thought the show was over. But then I discovered Maria Sanchez. Maria has made the show professional, and she's helped make it a better show. So I'm glad that I had two of my favorite women on the show. And normally we play a song on the as we go out in tribute to our guests. But tonight we've changed it up a little, and we're going to leave you with my favorite song from West Side Story. So this is Maria, Maria Sanchez. We'll see you next week, folks. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both.
And the continued success.
All right. Thank you.
See you next week. Thanks.
The most beautiful song I ever heard.
Maria.
All the beautiful sounds of the world in a single word.
Maria, Maria,
Maria, Give the people their right to vote.